You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Eusebius is on Twitter at Eusebius.
WWFSA has come up with what will now be Wednesday public education information campaign to help the city of Cape Town to really try and get through to the public to understand what exactly Day Zero is all about. And in addition to that, and as important as understanding it, is also what we actually need to practically do to change our behavior. And as I've been saying the whole morning, and I know you're sick of me repeating it, but I can't repeat it enough, because we tend to focus a lot on personalities, on state capture, on other aspects of life in South Africa that affect us in material ways. We don't put the spotlight enough on also our natural resources that can themselves lead, when they are depleted, to wars, to conflict between human beings. And it's very important that we do so. And it's better late than never. I can't be virtuous about this. I mean, even in the media, we've really been late to the party in terms of putting the spotlight on Day Zero. So I'd ask Christine Colvin, who's the senior manager for the freshwater program at the Worldwide Fund South Africa, WWF, to join us today. And I'm very pleased to see that this incredibly lucid, easy to understand, almost like frequently asked questions that they had put out, is all over the internet. But the more people we can reach, the better. Christine, good morning to you, and thank you so much at short notice to come on the show.
Morning, Eusebius.
I think we should just start by simply, frankly, speaking to some of these issues and allowing people to call in if they have questions for Christine as well. Of course, 021-446-0567, especially my Cape Town listeners and residents in Cape Town, 021-446-0567. But anyone else, for that matter, who doesn't understand what this Day Zero thing is about, 011-883-0702. Christine, first things first. Can Day Zero still be avoided, or is it now a case of we can say with statistical certainty, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when? The most one can debate is whether it will be the 21st of April or maybe a couple of days later.
Yeah, the two key things that will determine exactly when Day Zero happens is how much water we carry on using in Cape Town and when we get the first rains. So it's very unlikely that we're going to have any substantial rains in the water source areas that feed our dams before June, July, if we're lucky. Mm. And so that means it's down to us. So by what Capetonians are using and doing in Cape Town, that can shift the bar. But I must say, at this stage, I think it's very unlikely that we are going to avoid it altogether. I think we are going to experience Day Zero, and exactly how that rolls out and still when it rolls out, I'm entirely clear on.
Christine, 28% full. That was the dams on the 15th of January. And then the calculation of 21 April, if I understand it correctly, is based on current consumption patterns and a couple of assumptions about when the rains may or may not fall, etc., etc. Explain one thing to me, just out of curiosity. You say here that this calculation assumes that we can't use the last 13.5% of the water in the dams. Why is that?
That water is very difficult to access in some of the dams, and we're also not sure what the quality of that water will be like. So that might require some adjustments within our bulk water system. But more importantly, we absolutely have to have that last contingency amount of water for vital basic services. And really, that's for our hospitals and the really vital services that Capetonians are going to kind of live and die by. So that means that for the rest of us, for households and businesses, at 13.5%, we get cut off. And it will kind of become a triage of making that decision of how we get cut off and when. There was an announcement yesterday that the CBD in Cape Town won't be cut off in an attempt to try and keep the economic heart of Cape Town beating. But obviously, you know, we can't say for sure. So as we get further below that 13.5%, once the rest of us have been cut off, it could be that eventually the CBD has to be cut off. It depends on when the next rains come.
So if residents, agriculture do not change behavior and the current behavioral patterns continue and 21st of April comes and that is Day Zero, what happens on that day practically?
Practically, it means that in our offices and in our homes and in our schools, importantly, when we turn on the tap, nothing is going to come out. And when the toilet, the cistern won't be refilling if we're still flushing it with mains water, which I hope most of us aren't. So it means that at that household scale, there won't be water available. And in order to get access to water, you're either going to have to buy water for drinking purposes, or go and queue up at these points of distribution to carry the 25 litres per person per day that is allocated to you. So it's going to be a time-consuming, awkward, uncomfortable, and quite strenuous process to get hold of water come day zero compared to just turning a tap, which is what we're used to.
I've been trying to wrap my head around, Christine, why it is that people don't have a sense of panic. We have a duty to not make people panic unnecessarily. And at the same time, I almost feel like we really can be useful in getting people to take this incredibly seriously. I mean, if each resident will be given their allotted 25 liters per day of water on day zero, that seems to me in the first instance like it will be a gigantic logistical nightmare.
It absolutely will be. To get water to those points of distribution, of which there'll be about 200 through the different neighbourhoods of Cape Town, is going to be a challenge in itself. I think we all know what the Cape Town traffic's like. To get us there, to park, to queue, to stay patient in the queue, all of those things are going to present huge challenges. And it is incredible that people, many people, are still living in denial of this reality. So, you know, there are many of us in Cape Town who've taken drastic steps. People are really proud of, you know, how they are managing to only use grey water to flush their toilets. They're only doing one laundry load a week. They've really minimized. And that is now, you know, you can actually see who's doing what up to a point within your neighborhood. There's a city map that has been shared widely on social media and through the city's websites and the watershedding Facebook sites, where you can go and have a look. If you've got a dark green dot, then you're within your monthly allocation as it has been.
Okay.
So we can start getting a sense of, you know, and is that true? So there is a verification process that needs to happen, because it's not based on actual red meter. So we need to be careful about drawing conclusions from that map.
Yeah.
But it's incredible to see, just from the numbers, from the volumes that we're still consuming, how many people are still in denial. And I guess, you know, water is so integral in our lives. And we just take it so much for granted. To now envisage queuing up to get the most basic quantity of water,
it seems too surreal, doesn't it? And it's also how they're basic. They're myths that all of us have internalized since we were kids. And I know, also having worked with many of your colleagues over the last couple of years, how basic things that we say that come out of our mouth is just not true. But that's how we live our lives, Christine. People think, for example, and I know this is going to sound stupid to you as the expert, but you know how this is now conscience as a public, that water comes from a tap.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's been one of our bylines, is water doesn't come from a tap. You know, water depends on a healthy climate, healthy living landscapes, the catchments that our water ultimately comes from, and the water source areas need to be actually managed and well looked after. A critical threat to that in the Western Cape at the moment is, of course, alien vegetation.
Yeah.
And at the moment, we know that we're losing more than a large dam's worth of water to alien vegetation, which is invading our catchments, using much more water than our indigenous vegetation. There are so many hidden aspects like that influence how much water is available to us as a society to use, and what the cost of that water is, that haven't become adequately visible to the average water consumer.
There's so many people who want to ask questions, Christine. I really hope we can have you on as a regular as we try and deal with this thing now, at least once a week, or one of your other colleagues. But I want to ask one more question before I take our listeners' calls for you and their questions, which is this. Again, so that people can understand the reality of this, besides the fact that we will have to queue in Cape Town on day zero, presumably, if you have a business where a large amount of water is an important part of the input, or even for that matter, if you are running a school, for example, then there's the very real possibility that businesses, schools, and many workplaces and institutions will have to shut down simply on account of the lack of availability of water, as, again, as surreal as that prospect sounds.
Absolutely. You know, businesses have already been asked to cut back by 45%, and industries, the amount of water that they're using at the moment from the mains. So essentially, unless you've already got yourself prepared with alternative sources of water, be that groundwater or desalinated water or recycled water, you know, maybe using the effluent from your neighbor in the industrial area, if you can treat that and use that as your input water. Unless that's happened by now, it's unlikely to happen in time for day zero. So there are some businesses who've taken water risk really seriously. They've got involved with focusing on absolute efficiency in their operations. And we also have worked with many who've become active water stewards, who are not only looking at their own operational efficiency, but looking after the catchments as well and helping to keep those in a healthy condition, to keep delivering water into our water system. But you're absolutely right. Those many businesses and industries are going to face the prospect of closure, and schools as well, unless they have already got alternative sources of water, particularly for sanitation, or unless they've got geared up for dry sanitation during this emergency period. You can take enough water with you to school to drink, but you can't take enough water with you to keep flushing the toilet if you've only got flushing toilets. Jeez. So depending on the alternative of those sources that are available to individual schools, many schools will have to close. And that then has knock-on effects on parents, because parents are also not prepared, you know, to be looking after children all day during the week. Absolutely. If they still have to go to work.
Absolutely. Let's take some of our listeners' questions for you. Lee in Claremont, thank you so much for calling in and holding on. What is your question?
Hi, it's Daniela. Actually, Daniela Lima is my surname. There's two questions I've got. One, the city of Cape Town, although they are very for densification, they're approving many developments, which are probably aimed more at a high market, which use a lot of water to build. I know the water is from underground, or they're using the underground water, but it's still water which is being used for to build these developments. And the second question is there no way the city of Cape Town can use actually seawater for the flushing of the toilets and the sewage without having to desalinate it?
Very good questions, both of them. Go ahead, Christine.
Thanks, yes. So first of all, building, like all industries, is under the same levels of restriction. So building has also had to reduce its consumption by 45% up until now. It will be required to reduce it further as stricter measures are introduced from February. They are not exempt. I think what's really critical is that these new developments, that as soon as possible, we need to get a whole slew of new bylaws through that encourage alternative sanitation methods, dry sanitation methods in new developments, insist on water efficient devices, and potentially, you know, also insist on rainwater harvesting at the household level. And we've seen that successfully implemented elsewhere in the world, like in Australia. So the bylaws that control those new developments, we need to fundamentally rethink how we live and work in Cape Town, because the city's approach to this has been that this is the new normal.
Yes.
You know, yes, we've always had droughts in the Western Cape throughout the whole country. And worldwide, we have drought periods. But the scientists are in agreement that under conditions of climate change, if the climate is going to heat up around the world by 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2 degrees, which is we are going to bat battle to keep it within that 2-degree limit. Mm. Then the impacts on the Western Cape in particular are that we are going to have more prolonged droughts. We are going to be hotter and drier. So everything we do from here on in has to take that new future, that new normal into account. Mm. And we have to design our future according to those new specs. So, you know, in some ways, maybe this intense stress that we are feeling now and this pressure into our water and economic system is just in the nick of time to get us to actually reboot the whole economic system to a completely different water future.
Okay.
And then on the issue of seawater, what's difficult at the moment is that we have a single reticulation system through our city that is designed around transporting potable water. And so, we have this beautiful drinking water, a drinking quality water coming to our households for every single use, including, you know, moving our sewage kilometers through pipelines, which is clearly not the most sensible use of drinking water in a new normal. So with time, options like that need to be considered, and probably dry sanitation is an actually easier to implement and more effective option. But at the moment, to reconfigure our whole reticulation system so that we have a dual system, one that is conveying drinking water and one that is conveying seawater, is just too expensive to retrofit and too difficult to retrofit at this stage of the emergency. So I would suggest that in the future we need to look much more towards dry systems. We are, after all, a naturally energy-rich country and part of the country. We have beautiful solar power and plentiful wind power as well. We could be using renewable energy to treat sanitation completely differently at the household level.
Okay, we're going to take a break there. Christine, I could listen to you the whole day. I wish you were talking to me about poetry, but what about this very serious subject? But there is a level of literacy, I think, slowly we're building up now with people understanding 87 liters, no more. How does that break down, etc.? On the other side of this break, we'll take a couple of questions back to back and see how many of those you can answer in the time left. We're in conversation with Christine Colvin from WWF, and we're talking about day zero and trying to be as practical as possible in helping you understand what will happen and what can be done. Please keep it tight, and don't worry, we will make sure that we put the spotlight on this issue on a weekly basis as we monitor what is happening to the dam levels and water in Cape Town. So just get straight into the question. Olivia, what do you want to ask?
Hi, I want to know if I use my portion of water, allocated water, to perhaps flush the toilets. I'm an individual.
Yes.
And I use my 5 liters or whatever to flush the toilet. Would it actually work on the sewage system, or would it just kind of go somewhere and sit? And the second thing is it not going to cost more in terms of infrastructure to fix the infrastructure afterwards when day zero is over?
Okay, thank you, Olivia. Very good questions. Again, Ruth, what is your question? Okay, Ruth, sorry, but we're running out of time there. Mark, what is your question? Get straight into it.
Just a quick question on the sewage system. After day zero, would the sewage system still be working if you put your own water in the toilet to flush the toilet? I mean, I have a pool that are full. Obviously, I'm not using it. I can obviously use that water just to flush the toilet. Would the sewage system still work?
Similar question as Olivia's. And what is the answer, Christine?
Yeah, I think they're going to be, you know, this is new territory, and wastewater treatment is not my particular area of expertise in water, but this is going to be new territory for the city engineers and for wastewater treatment engineers who are working not just in Cape Town, but in Drakenstein, Paarl, and Stellenbosch. So the levels of through flow into the sewage system are obviously, come day zero, they're already going down, but come day zero, they will get dramatically less. And it is very likely that in most areas, sewage will not continue to flow all the way through to the wastewater treatment plant because there's simply not enough water pushing it through. Then to restart that system, that is going to be an interesting exercise, you know, and how we do that, and whether that's a gradual thing or whether there has to be pulses of water coming through specific neighborhoods in order to move the kind of residual sewage that's still sitting there from when day zero started. started. Those are questions that the wastewater treatment engineers are looking at and having to ask now. I think for the guy with the swimming pool, honestly, I would save that water. At the moment, if you can do anything other than throwing water down a toilet, save that water, keep it. Once day zero starts, we don't know how long is day zero going to last. You know, we could be really lucky and have heavy rainfall in April and May, and maybe by the end of May, you know, taps are starting to come back on. But if it's anything like last year, and let's remember, you know, California's drought lasted for 4 years. We are in year three. We can't assume that this winter is going to be any wetter than the previous two winters that we've had. So we save any water you have, save it. Don't use it for flushing your toilet.
In addition to that, water. Christine, the point that you made as well in this frequently asked question set is that even if we are lucky with a beautiful amount of rain this season and this winter, that day zero is not going to be a one-day event. It will at the optimistic end, it will be at least a couple of months, and it could be as long as 6 months. So it will take a while before the benefits of good rainfalls in the short to medium terms will make a difference to the restrictions that will be imposed on day zero.
Absolutely. And that's why we're also still saying to people to, you know, we had the conversation in the office where husband and wife were arguing, it's too late to put in a JoJo tank. No, it's not. We should still do it. It's not too late, because when rain starts falling again in winter, the rain that falls on your house, you're going to experience that first. It's going to be weeks, maybe months, once the rain has fallen in the water source areas, the rivers have started to fill up again, the dams have gradually started to fill up again. That all takes time, but you can be harvesting rainwater from your roof as soon as it rains. So make the best use of that and use what you have. Start rethinking your home in terms of what water infrastructure do I actually have here at my disposal. My roof is my catchment. I need to use that catchment and save as much as possible. My swimming pool is my reservoir. I need to prevent all evaporation from that and keep it for emergencies. And storing some bottled water, making sure you've got drinking water available for emergencies as well, because rainwater, pool water or groundwater cannot be drunk unless it's been treated. And we're going to be covering that in a future Wednesday water file.
And where can people go to access that lastly?
That's on our website at wwf.org.za, and every Wednesday we'll be posting these water files on critical issues that are going to help Cape Tonians get ready for day zero.
Thank you, Christine. We look forward to having you back on the show. I can't wait for us to discuss something that obviously is, from a public health point of view, as important as the water issue itself and related. In fact, what are the dry alternatives to flushing? I know that's going to be up in the next week or two, but thanks for coming on today.
Thank you.